started building our own, and eventually we decided to turn that into a product. And fast forward, gosh, I think it's two and a half, three years from then now. We're now full time on Beaver Builder, and things are humming along.
This episode of the Matt Report is brought to you by Pagely. Pagely, where we help big brands scale WordPress, it's enterprise WordPress hosting in the Amazon cloud. If you're building big, powerful WordPress websites for your clients, you need big, powerful hosting, and Pagely delivers. I use Pagely for my websites and e-commerce shops, so I trust their service, and I have no issues recommending them to you. Look, I only bring on sponsors that I trust. And who else trusts Pagely? Verizon, eBay, Disney, Twitter, and more. You can see that right on the homepage of their website. Pagely is the OG of WordPress managed hosting, and they're innovating the market every single day. If your clients trust you to write scalable code, then trust Pagely to host it for you. Check out Pagely.com. Episode 2 with Robbie McCullough of Beaver Builder. Here to talk about, of course, page builders and the excitement around page builders and what makes them such a passionate tool for so many people in the community, right? And we're going to talk about how Robbie builds a community around his plugin, his products, and what that's done for his business and how that's sort of exponentially grown its awareness, its adoption, and really one of the largest motivating factors of Beaver Builder's growth, and it's a great testament to him and his team and how they've done that. Page builders, love them or hate them, we're going to dive right into that stuff today. It's mattreport.com/subscribe. As always, thank our sponsors, Pagely and Valet. Let's get into the show. Hey, Robbie, welcome to the Matt Report.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And like a great interviewer that I am, I forgot to ask how to pronounce your last name, so I'm just going to do it right here. It's McCullough. Am I
perfect?
Correct?
Okay. Yep. Perfect.
I thought I'd do okay on that one. But welcome to the program, sir. You are one of the masterminds behind Beaver Builder. Am I correct?
Well, that's a very nice way of putting it. I don't know if I'd say that, but yeah, I'm one of the co-founders of Beaver Builder.
You've been obviously had plenty of your fair share of letting people know how this product came around, how you and your team started Beaver Builder. But for folks who don't know who you are, give them the 2-minute elevator pitch of who you are and what you do.
Okay, yeah. So we'll quickly first, Beaver Builder is a page builder for WordPress, and it was created by myself and my two business partners, Justin Busa and Billy Young. We had a web design studio prior to starting Beaver Builder, so we were mainly doing client services, and we were based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. I came onto the Fastline team, gosh, about 4 years ago. Justin and Billy had been doing it before me, and I met them on Craigslist. And we were working together for a few years, and we started on this little side project, a page builder. And we kind of started building it because, you hear the phrase "scratch your own itch." It was something that we wanted that we couldn't find out there. So we started building our own, and eventually we decided to turn that into a product. And fast forward, gosh, I think it's two and a half, three years from then now. We're now full time on Beaver Builder, and things are humming along. We stopped doing client services about a year and a half ago, and I've been focusing everything on Beaver Builder.
Nice. We're going to talk about the political stances of page building in the WordPress space in a little while, which is timely for all of the United States presidential race going on at this time. But anyway, what is the balance like? Because I'm trying to strike that balance on my own, and I know a lot of folks in the audience are too. Balancing the time of product versus agency work. And how did you, at the time, sort of manage that? How did you give the team time to work on client services while you built the product? What did that whole cycle look like for your team?
It was a little bit messy, and it was definitely something that we kind of we had to learn and figure out and adjust as we went. when we started, we were full-time doing client services, and then and like literally Beaver Builder was this kind of side project that Justin kind of spearheaded it. He's our lead developer. So he started working on this on the evenings. And we really like we had our kind of Monday through Friday office hours that we consciously dedicated to our client services work. But then we were spending our kind of evening hours working on Beaver Builder. And then when we launched, you know, we started taking like doing support and like, you know, we started having like actually getting eventually we started getting a customer or two. But we started doing, we started kind of shifting our time and doing some of our support for Beaver Builder in the mornings. And then, so we'd do the first half of the day as like as Beaver Builder, and then the second half of the day was client work. We were really, personally, myself, I was really reluctant to move away from the client services business because it was established and it had a history, and it was consistent. Like as consistent as it can be, like running your own business, like there was a bit of peace of mind that, you know, we had this ball rolling and we could keep it rolling. And it felt like a really, really risky move at the time to give that up to focus on a product. But eventually, we had some good advice from some mentors and advisors that basically told us that, you know, you're not going to be able to do two things well. You can either do client services well, or you can do a product well. But if you want to, you know, if you want to kill it in one of these areas, you're going to have to let one go and focus on. So, I don't know if that's true, like if verbatim, like you have to do one or the other. In our experience, we took that advice though, and I think it was a good decision looking back on it.
I'm always interested in that little nugget of time frame for people who are building products. And these are people that could be building products or a productized service, and they might have a day job where, you know, they work for somebody else kind of thing and they commute to work and they're just trying to sort of get out of that rat race. Or they're a creative agency where they're sort of bootstrapping the funding of a product based off of the revenue from the client services. But anyway, the point is I'm very interested in that little nugget of time where you make the decision of saying no more client services, we're all in on product, which you hear a lot of people say in interviews, and I'm guilty of that myself, of bringing people on and they say that. They say, well, I say no more client services. It's just full. And once we made that decision on full product, that was it. And we're off to the races. But that like little gap right there is something that people could lose sleep over greatly for some amount of time. What did that look like for your team? Was it sort of, okay, we have no more revenue coming in from client services, like we're eating ramen noodles and sort of living out of a garage together? Like, what did that look like at that little nugget of time for you?
You're right. That is a good point. Like hearing you say that just kind of brought me back to that period. And there were two sides to it. There was like the financial kind of business side, but then also the like personal, emotional relationship side. I remember I had taken on a big client and a big project maybe a month before we made this decision to stop doing client services. And this was, you know, we were expecting this project to be like a 6 month to a year, potentially ongoing. I mean, this wasn't something we were just going to wrap up in a couple of weeks. And I remember like agonizing over sending this email kind of saying like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be able, like after we spent this time, like kind of working together and building a relationship, I'm not going to be able to complete your project. We all like went well out of our way. I mean, at that point, like we wanted our clients to have like the best experience possible. So we made sure to communicate with everyone and help them find someone to replace us. But it was a bittersweet time, and it didn't just happen in the snap of the fingers, like you mentioned. Like it was probably several months where we were still, because you know, anyone in the services industry probably knows, like you'll get an email from the client, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, asking for an update or that has a new project for you. Like it's not like we could just put a notice on our website and close down shop and you know just have a clean break and walk away. It was definitely a process. One of the big like struggles for us, I think, was having to kind of let down all of these clients that we, you know, grew relationships with and liked and you know understood them and their business. It was sad. I think to do that.
This episode of the Matt Report is brought to you by the team at Valet. Valet helps brands unleash their potential with real-time metrics, intelligent recommendations, and that age-old method of having an awesome team to back it all up. See, my friends at Valet are up to something really, really cool. But first, let me ask you this question. Every time you build a website for a client, don't you feel like you're making the web a better place? Well, here's the thing. Valet's got something in the works that will let you back that claim up. It's called Valet Metrics, and you can get your free website snapshot over at valetmetrics.com. It's an amazing tool. You get in-depth analysis of a website covering security, speed, usability, traffic, conversions, all wrapped up in this beautiful reporting dashboard that provides action, not fluff. You and Valet, making WordPress and the web a better place. Get your snapshot at valetmetrics.com.
Yeah, I think that's the one factor that I don't hear enough of when I listen to other product people say that they've exited the agency side. Is the relationship with these people, because you work so hard, you know, for a majority of your clients anyway, your portfolio clients, you work so hard to build up this relationship, and you're there with them for potentially a year or more working on this stuff. And if you're helping them grow their business, which a lot of us are, it's not easy to just send that email and let them know that you're no longer going to be there to support them. I'm sure that's, I know it's a bit of a struggle at that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There were in particular too, there those projects that I was really proud of and enjoyed working on. I mean, it was sad to kind of split paths on some of those. Some of the things that I enjoyed building and being the builder of, and then seeing them kind of go off into other hands. It's like your little babies are leaving.
So you and I, for folks who don't know, we both have what is sometimes confused to be similar products. And most recently, Pippin Williamson of Pippin's Plugins did a recap of page builders, and my plugin happened to be in there, Conductor plugin. And of course, yours was in there up against some of the other larger, maybe more, I don't want to say established, but plugins that have been around for quite some time, like a Divi, right? Or like a Visual Composer. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But one of the things that I've found, at least with the development of Conductor in the way our team works, again, we still do client work and we do have the product, is the client work sort of not only funds the operation of creating product, but it's also a way of getting that feedback from what I'll call boots on the ground, right? So we see the pain point a particular customer has, we look at that and we say, gee, would that work well in Conductor? Were you using that, or do you sort of miss that kind of opportunity now that you don't do client services? Was there any benefit from developing Beaver Builder from the client services stuff?
Yep, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Again, like hearing you say that just brought me right back to that time period, and that was one of the concerns that we had and discussed. That the client services. So there was a point where we'd launched Beaver Builder and we were still doing, more or less full time. We were still a full on client services business, and we were using Beaver Builder for every project. So it was kind of like, I called it like our research and development like lab. We got the hands on experience of like working with the tool, working on real sites, working on different server infrastructures with different plugin stacks. I mean, I'm sure anyone that is a developer knows the difference between developing something on your like local MAMP install versus trying to publish something as like, on the WordPress repo, where it's all of a sudden has to be compatible with all the different, infrastructures out there. And it's, it's a hugely different beast, and having the client services for us was definitely like a way that we could kind of work out those kinks. And I guess in that sense, it worked out really, really well. I think Beaver Builder as a whole is a much better product because during that first year we were using it so much in real world situations. And I guess to even like extend on that, I wish one of the things we were talking about is maybe trying to do like a charity website drive or something where we're all like building a website again, because it's been so long. For me especially, I kind of gravitated, I used to do a lot of coding, but I gravitated more kind of towards the marketing side. I don't spend as much time in a text editor as I would like these days.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. One of the best pieces of advice that I've received from, for balancing the agency work and product development was from Garrett Moon. And, you know, longtime listeners will sort of relate to this because I've said it a billion times. But, balancing the mindset of, hunkering down and just doing tasks for clients versus the fun and sort of creativity of product. Not to say that there isn't any fun and creativity in client work, but when you're trying to focus on growing a product, but you still have to do the client work, how do you balance that? And Garrett Moon told me that, look, on our Monday meetings, on the typical boring Monday meeting, we would just talk about the product. And that's how we started the meetings. We would just talk about, and it's a simple little just like mindset hack is you start the week off instead of saying like, gee, what sprints are left over from last week or which milestones did the customer not comment on from last week? Let's get the ball rolling on that. Let's focus on what's the next new little feature that we're launching or what's the feedback from the latest few rounds of customers and starting the week off with the product. Was there any little sort of, when you were doing services and product, was there any little hack that you did to say, okay, stay focused. We want to do product. How do we get there? There might be this client calling us to, refresh their template, but we don't want to do that right now. What did you do in those scenarios, if anything at all?
That's an interesting one. I remember, one thing we did, So I mentioned Justin, our lead developer. He kind of like he started working on this page builder as like his kind of evening project, and then we all kind of jumped in and started supporting him to do what we could around his work. At one point, I think he was the first of the three of us to let go of his clients and start focusing on Beaver Builder. So. I don't know if that's like a trick in our experience, one thing that kind of naturally happened was that one of our team members was going full steam on Beaver Builder while we were kind of managing it wasn't like there was any animosity. I don't know if this is coming off like, oh, he was like, he got to go like do all the fun stuff. Like it just kind of worked out that way naturally.
Sure.
In my experience personally, the client services work is a little bit less cerebral I knew what I had to do. Like when you take on a client, it was very comfortable, I guess would be a good word. Yeah. And as opposed to trying to I didn't have a background in marketing. We didn't set out to build a product. So a lot of our experience has been kind of like on the job training. And it's kind of a daunting task. Like when you're just like sitting down at your computer and you're like, okay, I got, 6 hours to try and get people to buy my product. Like, what do I do? Like, where do I focus my time? And like, should I be writing blog comments or posts or being on Twitter or Facebook or, setting up AdWords or this or that content market? Like there's no direction, I guess. And it's a lot easier to kind of, it's a lot more difficult to kind of manage your time and be efficient in that setting for me, or it was something I had to learn to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, and let's transition now into running the Beaver Builder business. And I actually want to fast forward even a step further, unless there's something you definitely want to pause me and ring out in the first few months of Beaver Builder's sort of full term life cycle here. And that's, how did you grow the business and where did you focus those efforts to go beyond, let's say the first few thousand active installs, right? So, the typical word of advice is, well, we put something for free in .org and the freemium approach really worked and it got us, the first thousand. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what happened with you. It happens with a lot of folks, but how did you get over the plateau in the beginning, right? After you had those first few thousand, what was it that got you to the next, you went from 2,000 to let's say 10,000 or whatever. What was the real sort of spikes that helped sort of accelerate the business at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. A combination of a ton of things, right? Like I wish there was some like secret sauce. Like you just got to do this and there you go. Yeah,
just start a blog and you'll be fine.
interestingly, actually, we started as a premium product completely, and we didn't put the free version into the repo until it might have even been like 6 months after we launched. That came later on. To be honest, too, we were kind of like, we didn't spend a lot of time in the WordPress community back in the beginning. Like, we used WordPress a lot. But, you know, when we started doing Beaver Builder, we kind of jumped in with 2 feet to this, like, to the community and, you know, meeting people, reading the blogs, kind of staying up on the beat. And, like, when we launched, we weren't GPL even. Like, we just didn't really, I guess, understand how the ecosystem worked and functioned, and we were kind of doing things our own way. But all this is like, this is, I'm kind of like going off on a tangent. It's just funny to like think back on like the repo and open source. Like, gosh, we like, we're so,
That's fine. Let's dissect that, because again, even my product is still not on .org. So let's talk about that. What was your opinion on not going into .org like so many folks do? You know, what was the overall opinion on making it premium only and not going into .org in the beginning?
We were really, I guess maybe we, like, we didn't know the community and like the open source world well enough to trust it. Sure. I think we were really kind of leery at the idea of, like, you know, we were going to, especially in the context of like, oh, we might, like, you know, invest our business, like all of our time, like this is something that we might go all in on, like the GPL, I guess it was really, really scary. And this is also having like a, you know, not a very good understanding of kind of the intricacies and how people are making it work successfully, like in the business space. But yeah, I think we were just scared. It was a scary thought, like putting our code out there, like, you know, putting a free version of Beaver Builder out there. We kind of were thinking like, well, what if someone just, you know, takes it and buys a copy of our premium version and then puts the two pieces together and, you know, we're SOL. I think we kind of, through paying attention and like watching other people in the space. I mean, I love, like, speaking, Pippin came up earlier. I love what he did. I believe it's Affiliate WP, his product, where the premium version is on GitHub. Like, if you want to go and get a copy of the premium version of that plugin, like, you can just download it. It's all out there, but the business model still works because, you know, everyone kind of respects and understands that, you know, you're paying for the support, you're paying for the team. Like, there's so much more that goes into that price tag than just the code.
Yeah.
But it took us a while to grok that.
Yeah. And, you know, you see this, or at least, you know, this is my interpretation of it, is you see comments and you go to WordCamps and you hear people talk, and you see comments across, you know, blogs and GitHub and forums on .org. And it's like, you know, they should just, I don't understand why it's so hard to just put it up on .org. Everything should be free, you know, GPL, WordPress, open source. And yeah, that's awesome stuff to say. But for new businesses, it's like, it's weird. It's a weird thing to be like, we just spent 6 months of our lives developing this product. We're still uncertain if it's actually going to, you know, survive. And we're taking a huge risk by shutting off our mainstream income, which we all use to live off of. And then all of a sudden you're telling me just to put it out for free and support it for free. And it's like, it's almost flies in, you know, it's like the same thing as if you build it, they will come. Well, if you give it away for free, will they come? I don't know. it's a huge risk for those of us that are just doing this for the first time, you know. That's just a rant, but it's just people say these things. It's just not easy sometimes, right?
Sure. Finding that balance too. I mean, I think we might have gotten a little lucky in that we, on our kind of first attempt at putting the free plugin in the repo, we found a balance between the premium and the free features that I think works. Like, there's enough value in the free version that people use it and find it, you know, they don't feel crippled, I guess, enough that they're going to choose something else.
Sure.
But we still have the features that, you know, incentivize people to upgrade in the premium version. Like, finding that line of, like, what do you give away for free and what do you put behind a paywall, and how you do that to make everyone happy on both sides of the line is really tricky. And it's, yeah, a lot easier said than done. Like, you hear that all the time. Oh, yeah, throw it up on the, you know, throw up the free version. You have your premium version. You put your EDD checkout page on your, you know, on your website, one pager, pricing table, boom.
Right. And you're picking out a red Porsche, maybe a blue Porsche, whatever one you want. I mean, it just
depends. Why not both?
Why not? Yeah. Why
it's
not?
WordPress and we're in business.
Right. 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 Let's just do it. So in the beginning, when you went from, pro to, or your premium, offering to the WordPress repo, how did you make the decision to say what went into free, what stayed in pro, and what did that scenario look like? Did you have to restructure a whole bunch of stuff in the product? What did that look like to say, okay, what can we give enough of to make it work so that's not crippled? And any lessons in there, once you went to .org, did you learn any immediate lessons by not maybe putting enough features in out of the gate?
I think from the development perspective, I think that doing the .org transition, I'm sure, had its own set of kind of challenges and difficulties that I might not be as familiar with.
Sure.
I mean, the obvious one I remember vividly was learning SVN. I remember Justin throwing his keyboard, not really like throwing his keyboard, just like bashing his keyboard in, like, oh, this SVN, so like, you know, relative to Git, he was getting really frustrated, like why can't they just use Git on .org? But I'm trying to think. I mean, it was, I remember, so with Beaver Builder, right, you can lay out elements on a page and you can lay out elements in columns. And what, so you Beaver Builder is like a replacement for the WordPress text editor. But what we did in the free version is we kind of said, like, anything that you have in the WordPress text editor will give you here. So you can do text, you can do headings, you can do images, paragraphs, HTML, short codes, things like that. Like anything that you could put into the WordPress editor, we'd keep in the free version. But then some of the I don't want to say proprietary, but some of the more like advanced modules that we offer that you could never do with the WordPress editor, something like a slideshow. Like, without an additional plugin, you wouldn't be able to get a slideshow. I guess you could code it all up. Well, it won't go down into that rabbit hole, but yeah, something like a slideshow you couldn't do without an additional plugin in the WordPress editor. So I think like our modules we have in the free version are text, header, separator, HTML, maybe video. There might be one more in there, but it's basically the same options you have with the editor, but we give you the interface, the page builder interface, and the ability to lay it all out in columns. And if you're an advanced user, you could use that HTML widget and do just about anything you wanted with that.
Nice. How did you manage support? That's usually a point of contention for folks going into .org for the first time. And I can only imagine, knowing what I know about page building or builders, what that support must be like on .org. Were you ready for it? Was there a surprise there in the mix?
The couple different questions maybe we need to unpack there. Like, ready for it, no, we were not ready for it on like any sense of that word, or like the support. Like, we didn't realize, I think did you say it? Someone said it during their speech at Pressonomics. They're like, Brian, but he's like, if you're a WordPress company, you're a blank company. Or if you're a plugin company, you're a blank company. And he's like, what is, fill in the blank. And everyone yelled out, support. You're a support company. We didn't expect that. We didn't realize that. Support's, a huge, huge, it's very resource intensive. For .org, though, what our approach was that it was always an opportunity to like kind of bring people into our fold, like let them know how we do things. And we always tried to offer as much support as we possibly could, even for our free users. I guess I don't want to dig too deep into that, but yeah, we've been doing our best to like provide support to our free users, even though we say we don't. We still do. Like, if anytime someone contacts our support system, whether they're a free user or a paid user, we want them to have a good experience. And if we can, we want to, figure out their problem or solve their question, regardless of whether they're like customer status.
Sure. How do you manage the support from a technical level in the pro version? Are you going the Help Scout route, some knowledge base articles, Help Scout, which I hear is more traditional nowadays? Are you using BB Press? What's that look like?
Yep. We followed kind of the standard model. We started with a BB Press forum. Again, Pippin keeps coming up in conversation. He wrote a really good article about how he, like the plugin stack that he used originally on his support forums to kind of like turn BBPress into a support forum. Like there's some additional functionality, like being able to assign a post to a certain person or like resolving a post, some of these kind of like support centric features that aren't in vanilla BBPress. So he had a whole stack of plugins that he used to kind of fine tune it. And that worked for us up until just a couple months ago, actually. But as we started building our support team, and then also started paying more attention to how much time and like how much we're investing in support. Like the problem with BBPress is that it's not set up for a support forum. We had a lot of times where people were like stepping on each other's toes, or we didn't know someone was answering a question, and two people were typing the same response. We didn't have any statistics as far as like, eventually the story ends. We moved over to Help Scout, and Help Scout is amazing with all of these. Like, it's got a ton of statistics and metrics on, you know, happiness levels and time spent per ticket and, you know, times of the day when most of the tickets come through. And then this great suite of information that you can access, as well as the tools for, you know, having a team of people doing support. The downside, so we moved over to Help Scout. We're using Help Scout now, and we have a Help Scout knowledge base. The only downside to that versus the support forums is that we had a really great kind of community thing going on in the forums where other people were jumping in and helping answer questions, especially questions that maybe weren't related to like bugs or glitches in the product, but just kind of general, like, hey, I want my header to like, you know, fade away as the user scrolls down the web page. Like, can I do this with Beaver Builder? A lot of those kind of, you know, how do I do this? How do I recreate this look or this effect? Things that maybe weren't necessarily support, but more just kind of general questions about how to do things. The support forum was great for that. And we're still kind of trying to find something to fill that void, actually.
Nice. Now we'll just dive. Let's just go head first right into page builders.
Let's
dive right in. So at Pressnomics, one of the things that I said on stage was, how many people here like using page builders? And like nearly no one raised their hands, right?
I certainly did. But yes, I think I was
you
the
certainly
lone.
Didn't.
I looked down and away as I did it because I knew the shame.
Right. And you covered your shirt up and stuff like that. And of course, I have a plugin that's similar to page building, and one of the things that I've been doing a lot lately on my other podcast is diving into page builders and actually finding the areas where they're most effective. And I'll just preface this beginning conversation here with, I think page builders, yours specifically, and maybe one other, are making strides to becoming good solutions. Not to say that it was your product was ever a bad solution, but I think that there's this overall stigma of page builders being, I don't know, again, my perspective only here is it's a cop-out. It's not doing it the right way. It's, you could have done all that, but you're adding all this code. You should have just, learn how to code, right? is what some people will say. But I think over the years, things have become a lot more usable, a lot more efficient, at least from what I've seen in my short time of really diving into a traditional page builder. But how did you deal with that? Did you not even deal with that coming up in the WordPress community, right? Because such a tremendous amount of, motion in the WordPress community is driven by developers, from the real hardcore developer folks. So much community talks and some of the highest sort of shared content and trafficked material and attended talks usually come at the hands of the Pippins of the world, the developers of the world. How did you deal with that sort of, we don't want page builders round here, coming up in the community?
Oh, that's funny. Good way to put it. It's an ongoing, it's definitely an ongoing challenge for everyone, I would imagine, in the space. I think, you know, rewind all the way back, right, when we were starting Beaver Builder, we had a client who had a Theme Forest theme that had a page builder like bundled in with that theme. And he came to us, this is when we were doing client services, and he's like, hey, I found this theme. I like watched the videos. I see how this page builder thing works. Like, I want you guys to build my website with this builder. So then when it's done, I don't have to pay you guys anymore. Like, I can take care of and like change the website and update it myself using this page builder. And we were like, oh, okay, hey, like, sure, we'll do that for you. Built out the site, and we had this kind of like aha moment. We're like, oh wow, like this client, like we gave him the site and he was able to go in there and make edits. He wasn't sending us emails, you know, 6 months down the line to like change the copyright date from 2013 to 2004. Like, he was able to kind of take control of his website. And we were also able to build out, like, we were like, wow, we were actually able to do this faster than had we hand coded everything, which we would have done otherwise. So at that point, we're like, hey, we want to find we weren't happy with the particular page builder that was bundled with that theme. So we're like, hey, we want to find something better, but we really like this kind of like method of building and delivering sites. Like, this works. Let's try this. And then we couldn't find, like, we had these kind of this list of requirements that we wanted, and we couldn't find anything out there. So that was the kind of context that we started Beaver Builder, and it was our, like, we wanted to fix all of these. Like, we didn't like page, but we were in that group of the, you know, grizzly developer that doesn't like page builders. But we kind of had this realization, this aha moment, that this could actually be beneficial to our business. And then we set out to kind of fix all of those little things, that those nitpicks that we had. To bring it back, we always have been able to like counter everyone's arguments. You know, the top kind of five complaints you hear about page builders, we'd put a lot of work in trying to address them and like solve those problems in our way. So we always say, hey, like, yes, but look what we're doing. And I think that's been one of the reasons we've kind of been making noise, or you know, once when people, like, they're everyone has these mental blocks. Like, we were talking about the political spectrum or system right now in America. I mean, you see this all the time, where people have a mental block and they're just not interested in exploring beyond it. You know, like, they just kind of put up their wall and they say, I'm not, you know, page builder. No, I don't do that. This is why, without exploring, you know, the reasons behind what their that mental block is up there for. Sure. I think it's a really, like, I'm guilty of this myself. I think it's very much in like human nature.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what I was about to say, that a lot of this stuff, a lot of the issues for the most part in the WordPress community are human nature, right? This isn't a WordPress thing. It's a human thing. You know, what happens when you put 15,000 people in a Facebook group, right? this is what happens when you have this kind of thing in motion. And page builders certainly being one of them, because, again, I think that it's just driven by developers, number one, where they immediately, like, I think anyway, they see it as an easy way out. Like, you know, you're not putting enough craft or care into a particular project, or you're not really considering what's going to happen when, you know, you've got a million page views a month and da-da-da-da. Well, look. You know, in this particular case, I'm just building a 5-page site for the pizza shop down the street. They will never get that much traffic. So it's fine to use a tool like this. So I think a lot of it is sort of spearheaded by that. But then I think a lot of it, where that, distaste comes from, is the fact that a lot of people who get into servicing clients in the WordPress space, you know, buy the Theme Forest themes with page builders built in, or they buy, a tool like Visual Composer, where that sort of thought and care to the code, while it doesn't have a problem right now, it has tremendous impact on the site in the future in terms of security patches, upgrading WordPress, upgrading and changing themes, that kind of thing. And a lot of that is because the consultant didn't take care into learning to do things the right way. It's not even like the WordPress way. Like, in the year 2016, if you're not paying attention to the software you're putting on your computer or the apps you're installing on your phone, you're going to be in trouble, right? At some point, if you're not taking care of those things. So I think a lot of the, so all of this is to say, I think a lot of it has to comes down to the consultant who just, you know, I'll slap on this theme, I'll build whatever I want, and that customer will, I got my money, and you know, I'm off and I'm out and I'm trying to find another business to build a website for. A year from now, when they go to update, since I'm not updating for them, they're screwed, right? Yeah. And then, you know, you or I come in, the healthy sort of do it the WordPress way consultant comes in, and we say, what is this? What is this bird's nest you've given me for a website? Like, who built this, right? And then we're the ones putting the pieces of the puzzle back together, cursing page building all the way, because that's what we look at. That's what somebody used to build this site. And we say, no, 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 this wasn't done the right way, right? And then we actually use that as a selling point, right, to reaffirm or reassure the client that says, we know what we're doing. Right. Because I've been, I mean, you know, sure, my hands up sure. in the air saying, I've done that. Right. I've gone into a client project and said, you use Visual Composer to build all these pages. Who the heck did that? And they say, well, the last consultant said it was the best way to do it. What? Like, no. And then we use that as an advantage to sort of land the client. So it's very murky waters in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much like good stuff in there. I don't even know where to start, but it is, I mean, page builders are a shortcut, right? Like naturally, like, and if your goal or if, you know, what you're attempting to do is start a successful, you know, web services business, like if that's your end goal, you probably are doing yourself a disservice by using a page builder if you haven't already taken the time to, like, you know, this came up a lot with like SAS and CSS. Everyone, you know, in SAS, was huge. Everyone was saying like, yeah, SAS is this great shortcut, but if you don't know CSS, don't use SAS. Like, you should understand the building blocks before you use the shortcut. And, you know, sadly, yeah, we see this a lot too. A lot of people are not, you know, a lot of people are just jumping right onto the shortcut train. And then in WordPress, I think it's like the space, it's an issue because there's not a lot. It's as someone, if you're coming to buy a website, like there's a lot of people providing WordPress services out there. And I think for all the potential clients, I think it's very challenging to determine who, like the skill sets of each person, you know, like if I didn't know the difference, like I'd see a company like 10Up and I'd see a company that, you know, might be by some like 18-year-old in their parents' garage. And if they both have like a nice looking website and I didn't know the difference, I might think that they offer the same kind of caliber of work. But, you know, like we see people that come in our support forum, God bless them, like, you know, but they'll say, hey, I got this client that I'm working on their site and, you know, I really need the background color to be red. How do I do that? It's like, wait, like you're charging someone to build a website and you don't know how to like make the background color? It's like, oh man, like, like where do you find these clients? Could you please like,
yeah.
send some clients our way. Right. We'll take them.
And I think that, again, like I think a lot of folks look at this stuff and they say, ooh, like I can build this. So they just do simple, you know, paper math. They say, oh, or back of the napkin math, as my buddy Krogsgaard likes to say. Yeah. They look at it and they go, okay, I'm going to charge this client $1,000. I got this plugin for $100. I can build them an entire site. Well, I can make $900, you know, and I can sort of say like, yeah, I'm going to code your website. I'm going to custom code your website to do all this stuff. And they sort of look at it as like this marginal, you know, or this margin booster, if you will, in their project. And they sort of look at it that way, which, you know, I think now we're going to see this trend where people are servicing customers and just being more open that they're using a page builder, right? For particular pages or the entire site, whatever it might be. Because one, I just think that's a direction that's going to naturally happen, a shift in sort of transparency in the marketplace, on the consulting side anyway. And two, I think that what's going to happen is people are going to, you know, people are getting a lot more skilled with WordPress because of tools like yours and like other page builders. So I know a couple of months ago, I was bidding on a project that wasn't a huge project. It was, I think it was a $5,000 sort of product site build out. And their marketing team decided to just build it themselves using Divi. So that was I lost a good piece of revenue for that month on an $89 product. And ever since then, I've seen people come to our doorstep a lot more savvy with the tools and offerings of WordPress. So I think that anybody who's sort of in the general WordPress consulting space, not the enterprise and large app space, but certainly the person with a healthy budget, you know, $5,000, maybe even $10,000, a company with that healthy sort of marketing budget to put towards a website or a brochure site or a product site, even a small e-commerce site, that these tools are, they're looking at it like they look at Unbounce, right? For landing pages, that kind of
thing.
Sure, right?
Sure.
Where they'll just do it themselves and they'll train somebody and the code and upgrading and scaling doesn't matter right now, but it maybe will in about a year's time, you know, that kind of thing.
Again, a lot there.
Yeah.
the takeaway though is yeah, those shortcuts. And that's always kind of the downside of the shortcut is that it's likely going to leave, leave something you're going to get. There's no free lunches in nature, right? Like you're going to have to pay up eventually.
Sure.
But then, depending on the that's the thing. Like it's like the tools that you use should be, there's like three stories I want to tell right now, but no, it's a great tool for the right cases in the right hands. You know, like you said, your pizza shop down the street that has a 5-page website that, you know, they want to put their weekly special up on every week, but you know, they don't need to scale it out to support millions of users. They're not going to be doing active development for the next two. I mean, that could be a perfect case for a Beaver Builder or a Divi or something like that. But then, if you see someone that's, you know, planning a huge grand project and they're basing it on this foundation that's crumbling away, that's a problem.
Yeah, so I want you to go ahead and if you have time to tell one of those stories, one out of three that you have on your mind.
Okay, well, it just like popped into my mind, but there was this. We went to this is funny, way back in the day. Justin and I went to a YUI conference. That's the Yahoo Interface Library for those young folks, young listeners.
Wow, which that is some time ago.
It was Yahoo's jQuery kind of equivalent competitor. But anyways, long story short, there was a really good talk, and I remember this one piece of advice, and this guy was saying, like, you know, if you have a screw in the wall, you use the screwdriver or like a drill to get it out. But, you know, once that screw's a half inch out from the wall, you don't need to use the drill anymore. Like, you can just grab it with your fingers and twist. And his kind of like the takeaway or the moral of that story was like, you see a lot of people using, you know, the hydraulic power drill to like pull the screw out that last inch or two. And you really like, too much tooling when all you really need is just that simple thing that's sitting right in front of you.
Sure. Yeah. And so again, let's use that as a great sort of segue into the way that these products are marketed. And I know in this particular episode here, I'm going off on these tangents because I've just been so,
I think it's my fault. I think it's a mutual thing.
I've been so neck deep in page builders and again, having a product of my own. But so these products are not marketed as like, beware, or maybe beware is not the good one, but like, you know, you're going to be locked into this. And right now I'm thinking particularly with Divi, right? And because again, you build a site with Divi, you build a page with Divi, and shut Divi off and you're left with a bunch of short codes, okay? And unlike yours, when you shut it off, what you're at least preserving, and you feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, you're at least preserving as much content and HTML structure as you possibly can into the WordPress page.
Yep.
More or less.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but these products aren't like, it would not be smart for products to say, don't forget, if you move away from us, you're you're going to lose all your page building tools, because it's like, no duh. Right. If you move on and you decide to stop using this stuff, you know, at one hand, I can see like it's a tool. It's a tool. It's a complete ecosystem. It's made for you to use it and not have to worry about 100 other plugins, right? Like that's the value proposition here. But so many of us, you know, rightfully so, sometimes say like, well, use a plugin to do this, use a plugin to do that. Sometimes a customer doesn't want to do that. They don't know how to do that. So having everything there all at the fingertip is a huge boon to helping them build their business, because what's the alternative? They switch over to Squarespace. They switch over to Wix, which has everything built in it. But they've been told by so many people, please move to WordPress. It's the best thing ever. It's open source. It's a community. You're building into 26% of the internet. Don't use these other platforms. You're locked in. But then they look at WordPress and go, I have to go and get all this stuff piece by piece. I didn't build my house piece by piece. I just bought my house and moved in. So on the other hand, I can't fault people for, you know, using these solutions. But that was just one soapbox rant. Let's move on to the next piece.
I quickly agree. One of the criticisms that we've heard is and you hear this every, like, you know, especially being comfortable with WordPress, we want it to be easy. We think, you know, we're used to it. So we say, oh, it's so easy. Like if you need a website, you should get on WordPress. But yeah, it is a complicated system, and it has its upsides and its downsides. But yeah, no one's including that in their marketing material when we're saying like, hey, come build your website on Beaver Builder. You know, as a consumer or user, you won't really have a grasp of that full picture unless you go and do your own homework, I guess. And that might not be the best thing.
Right. And then when people get locked into these tools, or not locked in, but once people start using these tools, as I'm sure you found, they become super passionate about these tools because of the complexity that they're removing away from having to build a WordPress site, right? So again, I sort of go back to the Divi thing, because I recently did a video on it and I criticized it, and I think I shared this information with you before, prior to. But people were like, you know, oh, you don't know what you're doing. You haven't used, like, you didn't spend enough time using Divi to understand how to use it all, and here you are criticizing it. So, you know, my point is here is that people get super passionate about these things, which is good for running a business, right? It's great for you, right? And you know, because sure. You have, not only do you have people super passionate about it, but you have people spawning off other products around it, which really helps, you know, your ecosystem as well, right? Into sort of sure. terms of branding and stuff like that.
Sure.
So, you know, there's all of these people sort of to wrap up this political firestorm of page builders. There's this one half where people are like, don't ever use a page builder. Then there's this other half where people who are just starting out and learning WordPress, they need to use a page builder because it's the only thing they can do. And we shouldn't fault them for it. And then there's like this, you know, third area where it's these consultants that use it and get really fired up to using it, which, you know, again, could be good if they're doing things the right way, bad if they're doing things the bad way, right? So lots of political spectrums there in page building for sure.
Yeah. No, it's, again, I think going back to like the mental blocks and human nature, like I had this this Indian food restaurant that I just adored. It was my favorite place. I'd go there once or twice, even maybe a week, and I just thought it was the best Indian food in the world. And my girlfriend moved down to San Jose, and she's like, hey, I found this Indian food place. Do you want to go there? And I was like, oh, no. Like, we have to go to my Indian food place. Like, this place is phenomenal. You can't beat it. Best Indian food, hands down. And then I tried her Indian food place, and I was just like, oh my gosh. I know, I haven't been back to my place since. I feel bad saying it. And I won't mention the names because they're all great people, great business. But yeah, no, like, you know, we like things we're comfortable with and we're familiar with, and we like to kind of share the things that we've found and that are special to us and that we have experiences with. And it takes a nudge sometimes to kind of like push people out of their comfort zone. And I think, yeah, you see that. Like, a lot of people have their favorite equivalent of an Indian food restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm eating the beaver Indian food now because there's plenty of, I started to, I introduced it to a local client. Again, this small little business, and they didn't, you know, they were the right client. They just said, look, you do whatever you need to do. Like, we only ask that, you know, we want to display our services this way. Can you do it that way? Yeah, I could do that way. And, you know, I can quickly do it with Beaver Builder. And in fact, I can do it quickly with Beaver Builder free. And what we did is we actually built in support for Beaver Builder into our own theme, right? Baton and Baton Pro, which is on .org. Because even though our theme has lightweight paging abilities through our plugin with Note, it doesn't have, you know, a layout builder, right? You can't do any of that stuff to get pixel perfect layout detail like Beaver Builder. So why not just support that across the board for people who want to do it? So I think we'll see more of this. My feeling is we'll see more of this across more themes shops. I'm sure you see it all the time. People probably emailing you saying they're building in support, which is good for business.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thanks for, I appreciate the kind words. That's like hearing stories like that, like from people that are running their own businesses and coming back and saying, hey, like this tool has like helped me for this reason or that reason. It's been really like amazing. That's been one of the kind of coolest things of this whole experience is just seeing like how people have been using this thing that we built to, you know, just all the ways that it's being used. It's cool. Really appreciate that.
No problem. One of the things I want to just, as we wrap up the show here, because we've been ranting for some time.
Sure. Gosh, so, my fault. Sorry.
No, it's both of us. I want to know what's next for the business. You announced a partnership with GoDaddy for their managed WordPress services. They've got this sort of new onboarding process that I'm supposed to look at within the week or so from them anyway. What's that like? What's next for the business itself in terms of maturing the product, new product offering, anything going on in the business that's coming up?
Yes. Yeah. So I guess we were talking about this before, but I guess with the Netflix kind of release of this season, this might be kind of old news, but it's still new news for us right now. But we worked out a deal with GoDaddy where they're using the free version of Beaver Builder, and they bundled it as part of this onboarding process, which is actually really slick. You should, if you haven't tried it, or at least check out the video. I think it's pretty cool. Although I guess I might be a little, I might have a biased opinion. But yeah, that's really exciting. So we've already seen this like surge of installs on the free version from GoDaddy customers. And that's been really exciting. We're hoping to kind of continue, like we're hoping to get just more eyes on Beaver Builder through that partnership. And so far it's been working. So that's been really cool. You mentioned earlier, there's been this kind of blossoming community of third-party developers and people that are building extensions and add-ons and templates and themes for Beaver Builder and kind of creating their own sets of products. We think that's just amazing. And we're really trying to help that community flourish and grow. One of the things we're looking into is having some kind of a formal, these plugins, like third-party plugins, a set of guidelines, basically, that if your extension follows, we'll list it on a, you know, recommended page. Like, we'd like to have an official source, an official reference for some of these third-party tools that are popping up, and we don't have one yet. So that's something that's on the cusp. And then as far as, like, what we're working on day-to-day, we've got some really cool really cool stuff. We're doing we're like looking at our UI. We're trying to make some UI changes just to make the whole like overall building process quicker and more efficient. We're working on a lot of things, working on new features, working on kind of developing some of these partnerships and just growing the ecosystem and growing the family. I feel like I could probably spend another hour talking about all this stuff, and I shouldn't, but
no, that's great.
Maybe leave it at that.
Yeah, no, it's great. Maybe you can give us a little bit more insight in the private episode only available to MattReport.com subscribers.
And we'll get some good juicy, juicy tidbits in there.
Dive into that. I love all the stuff that's going on. I wish you and the team the best in growing Beaver Builder. And again, that's coming from somebody who sometimes has a product that gets confused with page building. we are actually looking to work and be more compatible with you instead of competing with you, because I think you're doing a phenomenal job with everything you have going on over there. So where can folks find you on the web to say thanks for doing the show?
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that and the kind words. People can find us at wpbeaverbuilder.com. We're on Twitter at Beaver Builder. We also have a Facebook group that's become kind of our community hub. And that's a great place to come and meet people and ask questions. And that's the Beaver Builders group on Facebook.
It's awesome stuff. Everybody else, it's MattReport.com/subscribe. Hey, everyone. Did you enjoy this episode? Head on over to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. It really helps. I say it all the time, but it definitely does. Always reach out to our guests and say thanks. We always link them up at the end of the show to share their Twitter account or wherever they can be found online. So make sure you go ahead and do that. They spend a lot of time with us. And thank our sponsors, Pagely and Valet, for keeping the Matt Report going until the end of the year. If you're interested in sponsoring the Matt Report, you can get a hold of me. It's mattreportblog@gmail.com or just mattreport.com/contact. Reach out. We are looking for sponsorships going into 2017. Again, if you want to sponsor one of the premier WordPress podcasts out there, go ahead and reach out, mattreport.com/contact.